Thank you for joining us for the segment of Notable People with your host, Andrea Schwartz, where we introduce you to some notable people making significant contributions toward furthering the kingdom of Christ.
Welcome to the first 2011 edition of Notable People. My guest today is a man who focuses on an area of life that most of us would like to imagine doesn't exist. Clayton Butler serves with Agape International Missions as the Director of U.S. Prevention. Preventing what, you may ask? Well, I'll let Clayton tell you about his work. Thanks for joining me, Clayton.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Please share with our listeners exactly what Agape International Mission focuses on and what it is you do.
Yeah, Agape International Mission exists to see Christ through the church defeat the evil of child sex slavery. And this is a difficult subject to think about. Most don't want to think about it. And Agape International Missions really was started in Cambodia. There's a massive problem in Cambodia with child sex slavery. And, you know, it's not easy, but it's one thing to rescue a child out of a brothel or from forced abuse. But the psychological, emotional, physical damage that a child will go through is just immense. And so Agape International Missions started a home called ARC, Agape Restoration Center. It's a long-term live-in center where these girls can really rebuild their life, find hope again, and it meets their emotional, mental, physical, vocational, and spiritual needs so that they can really start life anew. My specific job in Cambodia, when I was working in Cambodia, was to actually not just rescue kids, because that wasn't my job. It was to go into communities where child trafficking was happening and to see Christ transform cities. Because it's one thing we can go in and discipline behavior and beat people up and say, stop doing this evil stuff. But that's not necessarily a long-term solution. The long-term solution would be to transform the heart and transform the motive. And so in Cambodia, I was in charge of prevention in a town called Swai Pak. And because of the success there, we're wanting to see that same preventative model come to other cities, not just in Cambodia, but also in the United States. So now I'm back in the United States, and I'm the director of U.S. prevention, which is basically training the church on how to prevent sex trafficking from happening in their community.
Now, most people would say, I can understand how this happens in Cambodia, mm-hmm. but I think a lot of people would be surprised to find out that sex trafficking happens in the U.S., maybe in their city.
Yeah, it's correct. You know, sometimes we get desensitized to, you know, either prostitution or situations like that. And the truth is, the way young girls are being solicited for prostitution is really no different than in Cambodia, that sex slavery, that trafficking, to where what's happening is now they're recruiting younger and younger kids. The average age for in America for kids that are entering into prostitution is between 13 and 14, and that's the average age because these pimps are preying on young, vulnerable children to get them into prostitution. And it's a very devious thing that they're preying on their emotional needs and saying, I'll meet your emotional needs. But really, what some would consider prostitution, you look at a prostitute on the street and say, oh, maybe that's a choice that girl chose that lifestyle. But in reality, what's happening is these young girls are getting preyed upon by pimps that are trying to exploit them.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Are these girls kidnapped into it, or do these girls, are they in the sex industry and they go home to their houses at night and their parents don't know that this is what they're doing? How does it happen?
Yeah, and this is the question I get asked a lot, is they're saying, okay, I don't get this. You're saying that there's an epidemic, but my kids aren't involved in this, or are kids getting kidnapped? And there are cases where kids are kidnapped, but this isn't the primary source. And so some people say, okay, well, maybe it's kids getting shipped in from overseas. And that has happened, but that, again, is not the major source of where these kids are coming from. The reality is the vast majority of these kids that are being preyed upon and abused are runaways. These are runaways primarily from the foster system and from group homes. And so what this is these are kids that don't have a mother and don't have a father, and they're running away because they're not getting their emotional needs met, and a pimp is not coming and saying, hey, I'm going to kidnap you and put you in the dungeon and abuse you. What they're doing is they're saying, wow, you don't have a father? I could be like a father to you. You don't have you don't know what love is? Let me show you what love is. And then after this process of manipulating and grooming these young vulnerable kids that are running away from the foster system and group homes, then these pimps say, you know, would you do anything for me? You know, I love you and I'd do anything for you. Would you do anything for me? And then it's the process of brainwashing these kids to where they're saying, well, maybe I don't want to do this, but this is the only family I know. This is the only person that's ever showed an interest in me. And so these pimps are very clever in finding and exploiting runaways. So, you know, that idea that kids are getting kidnapped in California, I think it was 2010, there were 45 kidnappings in California, but there were 100,000 runaways in California in that same year. So it's not necessarily kidnappings where these victims are coming from. It's primarily runaways from the foster system.
So before we get into how you go about finding and rescuing these young people, are we talking about girls and boys, or are we pretty much focusing on girls?
Girls and boys. The difficulty is with the girls, it is a little bit easier to help them because they're primarily being exploited by a pimp and law enforcement can get involved. But for boys, sometimes there's not necessarily a pimp and it's a little bit more difficult in as far as like the rescue aspect if these kids are runaways and is the term survival sex. If they're operating what's called survival sex just to survive on the street to make money.
Okay, so before we get into how you rescue, who are the clientele that the pimps are selling these children to? Would we be surprised to find out what the clientele was?
I think we'd be surprised in the reality that, you know, we would assume that they're the most debased sexual deviants, which is true, but yet they're coming from every socioeconomic class. And even within the Christian community, I talked to an expert in sexual addiction, and he'd been working in the field for 20 years. He primarily worked with men that were caught soliciting prostitution and even underage prostitutes. And I was asking him, where do you think I should start if I'm trying to transform the lives of these Johns? Where should I start? And he said, you know what? Go ahead and start in the church. Because statistically, there's not much difference between the guys in the church and the guys in the street. And that was a sad truth. And I think that's a shocking truth for us to realize as Christians, is that sometimes we can point the finger at the culture and say, hey, culture, get your act together. You need to stop these things. But the reality is the church needs to model sexual purity, model freedom, model protecting our children as we bring that model to the culture, not just point at the culture and say, hey, we want you to live a standard of righteousness that isn't even found within the church.
Right. Do you have a sense that because of the way the media has ceased censoring a lot of things, which when I was a child, which is a while ago, would not have appeared on television, do you think we've been given such a dose of sexuality and the children have been sexualized in the schools with sex education and such that it sort of primes the pump for this kind of activity?
Sure. I mean, I don't have any statistical information on that. I know other people that, you know, spend a lot of time on researching, so I'm not an expert in that, but my anecdotal opinion is that absolutely is that we, in our culture, we're fed a diet of immorality and perversion, and that will manifest in some level. You know, when you, through pornography, the pervasive aspects of pornography, the objectification of women, we don't even view pornography as the objectification of women. It's almost winked at in within our culture. It's like, oh, you know, everyone looks at pornography. It's not that big of a deal, which would be shocking, you know, 30 years ago. But it is, I don't know if you've ever heard this analogy, you know, the frog in the kettle, that, you know, you toss a frog into a boiling hot of water and it jumps out. But if you slowly heat it up, it will sit there until it dies. And I think when it comes to these issues of sexual immorality, my personal opinion is that we've kind of been on a track for the last 20, 30 years, which is the kettle keeps boiling, and we're not really truly cognizant of all the ramifications that creates.
And I would have to say that based on some information that's come to light recently with a group called Live Action going into Planned Parenthood's, basically posing as a pimp and a prostitute, saying, where can I get birth control? Where can some of these underage girls, and admitting that they're underage girls, come in for abortions? The fact that it was so easy to get examples of this probably points to the fact that what you're saying is that this is quite an industry and the pimps want to keep their girls functional.
Yes, absolutely. It is a very organized industry. It's almost shocking how organized the industry is. You know, you talk about pimps who are utilizing websites and newspaper periodicals and aren't just keeping a girl saying, hey, you know, I'm from San Francisco, so I'm going to keep this girl on the street in San Francisco, but are operating within a massive range within Northern California, taking a girl from San Francisco to Oakland to Sacramento to Reno to Stockton, and just traveling all around the country in a very systematic, organized manner. And I think that video from Planned Parenthood shows that, you know, people aren't shocked at the reality of sexual abuse anymore. Just, again, it's kind of winked at, sadly.
So, assuming that pimps are in this business because what they want to do is make money and there's money to be had, I would imagine you are not a popular person when it comes to going and trying to locate these girls and then rescuing them.
Yeah, a lot of my work in Cambodia, you know, we would work to try to rescue, and that was in Cambodia, we work to try to rescue these girls, but in the United States, the main aspect is prevention. Because again, we're working to help rescue these girls, but I kind of liken it to this way. If all we do is rescue and rehabilitate, it's like sitting outside of a factory that creates a victim, and every time a new victim comes out, we rescue that victim and send that victim to receive care. But if we don't, as the Christian community, as the faith-based community, if we don't dismantle the process that is creating the victim in the first place, then we'll have to rescue kids for the rest of our life. And I'm not against the rescue and rehabilitation aspect of helping kids, but we have to confront the issue of how do we prevent this from happening in the first place. And that's the main area of my focus, that, you know, there's a lot of energy and enthusiasm for rescuing kids, but what about the energy and enthusiasm for foster kids? You know, in Sacramento, there's been hundreds of kids rescued, and that's where I'm based out of, hundreds of kids rescued by the FBI. And about 90% of these kids are runaways, primarily from the foster system and group homes. Now, the mere fact that we know that 90% are runaways, if we cared about the issue enough to transform it, then the church should be mobilizing around the foster system. The church would be saying, what can we do to make sure these kids have a home and that the first taste of love that they receive is not from a pimp, but from a godly family, from a mother and a father that love this child. And so a lot of it is taking one step back and saying, okay, like this is how I say it. There's three ingredients that create a victim, a sex trafficking victim. You have a supply of victim, a demand for that victim, and a facilitator that will connect those two together. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Now, and so my thing is saying, instead of saying, let's rescue the sex trafficking victim, which I agree with, let's take a step back and say, how do we intercept the supply before they become a victim? How do we confront the demand so that they know that this behavior isn't acceptable? And how do we transform the heart of facilitators so that they're not preying upon, they don't believe that being a pimp is a viable option in the future. And this is the format that we used in Swaipak, Cambodia. So the supply of kids in Cambodia were children from a community called Swaipak. So we started kids clubs, we started school sponsorship programs, there were pedophiles that were coming into SWIPOC, and we would confront them. We wouldn't do it in an angry way, but we would say, you need to leave this community. You're not allowed to do this. And then for the pimps and brothel owners, we actually started a gym to reach out to the pimps and brothel owners so that their lives could be transformed. So when you're actually reaching out to the three ingredients, to cut those three ingredients off in a preventative model, a long-term prevention model, then you're actually stopping that a victim from being created so that there has to be less rescues ultimately. And we're wanting to do the same thing here in Sacramento, and that's the plan we're rolling out, is that we're trying to cut off the supply victims. And so the supply victim is runaways. And so we say, well, how do we stop runaways? We can become foster parents. We could volunteer and become court-appointed special advocates so that we can legally fight on behalf of foster kids and abused kids. We can volunteer at a group home. We can start ministries within our church to promote foster care and adoption. And how do we cut off demand? We can help partner with law enforcement. We can write letters to our law enforcement to say, this is a big issue and we want you to focus on this. We want you to arrest these Johns. Because the sad truth is that, you know, for every prostitution arrest, for 10 prostitution arrests, 9 times they arrest the girl and only 1 time they'll arrest the guy. And we need our law enforcement to stop treating these kids, even young kids. A 16-year-old kid will be arrested and put in jail, even though they're not old enough to consent to sex legally. Yet they'll be put in jail. But what happens to that John? And so we need to write letters to our law enforcement and say, we want you to focus on arresting these men that are perpetrating this act.
So have you found that when you go into communities or churches and start talking about this whole issue, do you find that people are ready to step up to the plate and say, yeah, I guess I should consider becoming a foster parent, or are people afraid to get involved?
You know, I've been absolutely amazed and proud at the faith-based community. You know, sometimes we get a bad rep as Christians, and the only news press we get is negative news press. But I am so amazed at how quickly the faith-based community and Christians will lay down their life when they understand the problem. Because what happens is you say sex trafficking and this problem of sex slavery, and people say, well, I have no idea where to begin. I don't know where to start. I don't know how to help. But then when you break it down for people and say, these are the victims in our city, and this is what needs to happen. In Sacramento, there are 4,000 kids in the foster system. So we need to, as Christians, gather around those. You know, there's churches that are so big in Sacramento that they could foster and adopt all of those kids, one church. And so it's just that systematic of how does the church gather around in the foster care. There's a Christian foster coalition called Koinonia Foster Care. And I just talked to them this week, and they've said since people started getting this training on human trafficking and sex trafficking, they've said they've had their highest numbers of volunteers coming in to adopt these kids so that they don't become victims, that they can have a family. And it makes me so proud of the church that they'll lay their life down to put a kid in the family. Just like Moses going down the river, they're saying, no, I see potential in this kid. I see potential in this child. And not only that, we see the church going and doing outreach in inner city communities where prostitution is happening. And they're saying, okay, if this is the street that it's happening on, and this is the neighborhood, I want to see God transform this neighborhood. I want to see the love of God working through the church to transform this neighborhood. I don't want to just go into this community and say, hey, let's arrest everybody. But how do we show the love of Christ to people and say, how can I help you to live a different life? And to see the church step up like that has been absolutely amazing.
You know what this reminds me of? An author by the name of R.J. Rushdoony wrote a book called The Atheism of the Early Church, which is sort of an unusual title. But in it, he recounts the fact that in the first century, abortion wasn't as clean and precise a procedure as it is now. And with failed abortions, oftentimes children were left under the bridges of Rome, often when wild dogs would go and start mutilating the bodies, and the deacons of the churches would come, get a child, go to the list and say, okay, this is the next family. And they would come, knock on the door, and this is the child that you are to raise. And when people saw that this is what the Christians were doing, it increased the ranks of Christianity because they saw compassion. And some of these children probably didn't look like their own children, didn't have maybe all their body parts if they were partially aborted and partially mauled. Yeah. But it was he reports that as being a very, very significant aspect of the first century church.
Yeah, and I would agree that a lot of these kids maybe aren't physically mauled, but there is an emotional mauling that these kids have gone through. Maybe they've been separated from an abusive family and they're in the foster system, or maybe they've been abused by a pimp. And to see the church step up and to love these kids and start to become foster parents and start to do outreach in the community where these crimes are being perpetrated is really amazing, because I talk to a lot of pastors and they say, oh, this is kind of a new idea. And the main thing that I'm trying to say is this isn't a new ministry idea. This is what James 1:27 talks about, is pure spotless religion is taking care of the orphan and widow in their distress and keeping oneself from being polluted by the world. That this is part of being a Christian, is taking care of orphans and widows in their distress. And the sad truth is, within our community, the orphan is in distress and the orphan is being preyed upon by pimps and abusers. And we need to step in with our pure spotless religion and to say, I'm here to be a friend to you. I'm here to be a father to you. I'm here to be a mother to you. I'm here to be a brother to you, and to embrace these kids. And this isn't a new concept. It's just a new reality of how we need to love the orphan in our community.
And I would guess that people would say, but I'm not trained. I'm not trained in social work. But from what you're saying and what I know, this is the application of God's word to your life. There's no special training that you need other than to embrace the fact that if the Holy Spirit lives within you and you've got the word of God at your disposal, that you're equipped.
Yeah. You know, there's a great ministry that we're partnering with in this effort. It's called Adopt a Block. And Adopt a Block is a simple concept of saying there's blocks in neighborhoods where there's a lot of crime, there's a lot of terrible things going on. And instead of saying, hey, police, go in there and clean it up, they're saying, hey, the church needs to go in there and just love that block until it's transformed. And the thing that I love about this ministry is that I was talking to the lady that runs it, and they said, so what kind of training do you do? And she says, well, you know, if you can ring a doorbell and walk up to someone and say, how can we love and serve you? That's all you need to do. And sometimes I think as Christians, we think, well, I'm not equipped for this, or I'm not equipped for that, or I can't do this and I can't do that. And that lie keeps us from stepping out. And again, I understand that there are deep psychological needs for these kids and emotional needs, and sometimes professionals have to step in. But we cannot relegate ministry just to the hyper-professionals, the ones that have degrees, when the Bible says that the Holy Spirit lives in us and that we can share the love of Christ in action to others. And so I agree that sometimes we hide behind the excuse of, I don't have enough training, when in reality God is putting something on our heart, a compassion for something, and we need to step out in faith.
Right. And with the bankruptcy of most state governments and county governments, there's going to be a vacuum which should never have existed if the church was doing what the church was supposed to do. But nonetheless, a vacuum will exist. And so we should almost be happy that we would probably get less resistance at this point reaching out to help these people than we might have 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I totally agree, is that in the midst of this economic turmoil, there is a great opportunity for the church to step up and to really do what the churches should have been doing in the first place. And we're seeing examples of that. There's an organization called Safe Families, which is currently trying to get started in Sacramento, but it's operational in Southern California and I think in Florida as well. But it's basically the church taking over the foster care system of saying, we'll pay for all this, we'll administrate all this, we'll put the legal liability on us as well, because this is what our Bible tells us to do. You know, this isn't just a good idea, this is a government idea, but our Bible tells us to care for the orphans and widows in distress. And this is a great opportunity, not just with agencies like foster care, but law enforcement as well. Law enforcement has really been devastated by these budgets. And to be able to say, hey, how can we help you with the issue of child prostitution? Is there community watch that we could do? Is there a way that we can do outreach to the streets? Can you let us know about the information? The only reason we know to do outreach in these certain communities where prostitution is happening is because law enforcement is saying, these are the toughest communities where this is happening. Can you help us? And we're saying, sure, let's go in there and let's transform these communities with the love of God. And so it really is a pivotal moment for the church to step up and say, we're here to serve, we're here to love.
Do you find that when you have successes that you also end up being exposed to the wrath of the pimps who are losing their stock of girls?
You know, I can only speak for my experience in Cambodia because, you know, when you're in Sacramento, you're looking at a large range of people where you're not interacting within like one tight-knit community.
But when, I see.
But when I was in Cambodia, I was definitely within one tight-knit community. And the main thing that I would say is there were definitely pimps and brothel owners that would be frustrated and angry that we were trying to stop this trade. But at the same time, we were loving those same pimps and brothel owners. And they knew that we genuinely loved them. And that really covered over a multitude of anger that they might have for us. You know, I think of one brothel owner that we ran a medical outreach and we helped his mom, who was very sick and almost died. And we knew he was a brothel owner, and the church stepped out and said, well, we're going to provide medical care for your mom. And so he knew that we were trying to put him out of business, but he also knew that we would lay down our lives for his mom. And I think that's the message that I want to say is we're not just called to confront facilitators and to stop them, but we're there to show the love of God so that they might receive the same grace and to receive an powerful touch from God. You know, Paul used to be the greatest opponent of the church, yet he encountered God and he became the greatest advocate and father of the faith. And I really believe that that's what's supposed to happen with this issue of sex trafficking, that we're not just supposed to arrest all these pimps. And again, I'm not sad when a pimp gets arrested. I'm very happy about that. But I'm happier when these pimps get a chance to encounter the gospel and to have their lives transformed through love, that someone is saying, how can I serve you? How can I help you to have a different future? And I know the church can step up and really do that, that we're not just called as Christians to love and care for the victim, for ours also called to love and care for our enemies, to love our enemies. That's what should set Christians apart, is that we'll willingly go in and lay down our lives for our enemies. And I think that this component needs to be evident within this issue of sex trafficking, that we not only just try to arrest these pimps, but to see their lives transformed as well.
Okay, so I'm not really great at guessing age, but looking at your bio, I know you graduated from college in 2007, or you went to two schools, it looks like.
Yeah.
You're not an old guy. I've put you in your 20s. Am I correct?
Correct. I'm 28.
You're 28. So did you just fall out of the sky? How did a guy get involved with going to Cambodia to rescue girls in sex trafficking situations? Where did you come from?
You know, when I was a young guy, my dad was a pastor, and I remember taking my Bible when I was 10 years old out into the woods to read, and I never really understood what was in the Bible, to be honest, when I was that age, but I figured a good kid, that's what he does, and I remember opening up my Bible and reading what we're talking about. James, in the book of James, says pure, spotless religion is taking care of orphans and widows in their distress. And it just struck me. It didn't just strike me in my mind, but like in my heart, there was a deep burning of saying, I want to be a Christian that lives that out. Even as a 10-year-old, I remember saying, this is such a powerful thing, and I want to be someone that takes care of the orphans and widows. And my dad helped me to pursue opportunities to serve overseas, and I started to work overseas. Even as a young guy, I started to do short-term mission trips. And as I got older, I started doing longer trips and trips by myself to Thailand to work in orphanages. And my father really challenged me and said, you know, you have to have more to offer than your American passport and your tears. You need to, you know, equip yourself with education. And I remember I was thinking, all right, I'm going to go to school, get myself equipped. And so I got a degree in business ethics, and then I got a master's of theological studies. And I just really sent out my resume and said, God, open up a door for me. Just serve the orphans that are in the most distress, God. And so one of the opportunities that came back was with Agape International Missions. And I just thought, hey, I'm young. I'm single. This is the time to do it. You know, because sometimes you have a family. Sometimes you have obligations. And I'm thinking, I'm young, I'm dumb, and I'm single. Let's do some risky ministry. Let's do something that, you know, maybe I won't be able to do if I have a family and kids. And so I chose to work with this ministry, and it's been the most difficult work emotionally, but it has been some of the most rewarding and life-changing work. I would not trade it for anything in the world.
All right. If people want to find out more about what you do and maybe even get involved in some of the programs, even if they don't live in the Sacramento, California area, how would they get in touch with you?
We have a website. It's agapewebsite.org, agapewebsite.org. And you can get in touch with us there and see all the various programs, whether in Cambodia, here in the United States, in trainings that are coming up as well.
And in terms of donations, if people can't get involved, do you accept donations for your work?
Oh, sure. We'll accept donations, of course, yeah. We really live off the support of wonderful Christians, people that really believe in this cause. We are so blessed by the generosity of churches and individuals. And there is a place on the website that you can donate through the website. Or you can mail in a check. We would be really honored that, and we are fully transparent with our finances. If you want to know where that money goes and our budget and everything, we're fully transparent about that, but we would be honored to receive any financial support.
And aside from you, does Agape have a number of people who are available to go to churches and maybe spark the interest and the imagination of people as to how they could get involved in this area of ministry?
Sure, that we have other staff members. We're kind of a multicultural staff. In Cambodia, we have 58 Cambodian staff. But in the U.S., we have staff as well that would love to, you know, speak at a church. If there's a church that would like to hear more about this subject or to find out what they can do, feel free to contact us. We would be happy to serve in any way.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. I feel like I've grown up a bit in thinking that, gee, America has its problems, but I didn't know it had problems to this extent. So I thank you for opening my eyes, and hopefully our listeners will have had their eyes and ears and hearts opened as well.
Amen.
See y'all next time on the next edition of Notable People.
Visit us on the web at www.notablepeople.org.